hardly wait to hold you, enfold you, never enough, render your heart to me. We are Hottest 100s and Thousands, and we have taken control of your radio station. Podcast, podcast, this is the podcast in which we talk about the songs that have been deemed hot enough to be in the Triple J Hottest 100. My name is David James Young. I'm one of the four voices you are going to be hearing for the next hour or so. Joining me, once again, it's Nathan Harrison.
Hey.
It's Adam Buncher.
Hey.
It's Andrew McDonald.
Hey.
Oh, well.
Hey!
See, like, Deej set it up with such a nice, yeah, tender quote. Real, like,
yeah, we've gone from smooth FM. We've gone from smooth FM to Triple M in a fucking
yeah, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Speaking of Triple M favourites, a man who's crossed the Triple J, Triple M border many, many times in his career.
Been searched at either
end. And smooth
end.
FM, yeah. Now that I think about it. He is a...
Oh, yeah.
This man knows no boundaries when it comes to radio play. If he puts out a record, they will play it.
Someone will.
It's five o'clock somewhere. Ben Harper is playing on a radio somewhere.
That's a good career to have.
Yeah. Man. Oh, that's dude. Yeah, he is doing just fine. Yeah. But let's have a quick discussion concerning the next Ben Harper song that has made it into the Hottest 100. We're at number 80 in the 1997 Hottest 100 with Mr. Ben Harper. This song is called Faded.
You saw a silent crime, you so easily abuse. Lack of confidence, it's your best offense. You so easily confuse. You can't deny it, still you try to hide it.
Benjamin Harper coming in at number 80 in the 1997 Hottest 100 with a little ditty by the name of Faded. Let's throw it to the most faded man that I know. Actually, whoa. No, that's still Nathan. Nathan has still got your boy Faded.
What if you talk about, like, haircuts?
Oh, yeah, there we go. Yeah.
I went to get a haircut like a couple of weeks ago, and the only place that I could find was a place called Blade and Fade. And I was
holy,
like, I just
shit,
can't go there. I'm like,
why not?
I can't go to a place called Blade and Fade. They'll laugh at me. They'll make fun of me. They won't serve me.
They'll bully you instead.
They will 100% do that. They'll give me a bad haircut that, like, they know, oh, is bad, God. And I'll be too scared to say it's bad.
Just a bit of top, just a trim, thanks, guys.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah, right.
A trim. Okay,
yeah,
trim. Okay.
Yeah. Comes out with a sick mohawk.
Yeah. In, like, the sides of my hair, it would just say, just the trim or something.
That would be a tight
haircut.
And
I'd be like, how's this? And I'll just be, like, crying. I'd be like, good, thank you.
Oh, my God.
Thank
huge
you for cutting
thing.
My hair.
So, Ben Harper, blues, folk, rock, musician.
Roots.
It's just
roots.
The Ben Harper word cloud.
Yeah, yeah. Basically. Shoes you will not find in the word cloud. No shoes. Never any shoes. Byron Bay is in the world. It's one of the big ones.
Yeah. What's the bet he owns, like, a fucking houseboat in Byron or some shit?
You could just buy up Byron. Anyway, he plays bluegrass a lot.
Oh, yeah.
He plays it a whole lot.
Just before we go any further, I just found out that Ben Harper's net worth is $10 million. So he probably could
watch
buy
out,
Byron Bay.
Byron Bay.
I reckon Byron Bay would settle for 10 mil.
Ben Harper's 10 mil, yeah.
We talked about this guy once before.
It was the first one of last year, I think.
Different album, different time in his life, presumably. And this song, the main thing that really sticks out for me is how weirdly it's mixed. It's
oh, just, my God.
It's super weird. It's like got the guitar sitting all the way back in, like, the tiniest little corner of your left ear for the first bit. And then it switches. It just kind of, like, changes over. Like, I don't know whether the producer just had aspirations of making, like, pop bangers and just so got, you know, it's like, no, man, it's just a root song. So he's like, well, I'll see what I can do to make it more interesting for myself. The other thing that really sticks out to me is just how lethargic Ben's singing really is. Like, I get being laid back, man, but, like,
you're
this
reading
is
my goddamn mind. Like, it is.
Wow.
Like, it's like, legit feels like it's a mashup. Like,
yeah.
It, like, the vocals are from something else and the instrumentation is from, like,
kind
a different
of
song entirely.
objectively, he is a fucking good singer. Like, when he gets into, like, that blues howl, when he's got, like, the full band behind him and shit, like, he is untouchable. And so to have him just be, like, literally sound like he's just woken up on this song, I'm just like, who put this together? Like, how were these both decided as the best takes?
Because the guitar is so chunky, right?
Like, yeah. Like a bit, like, post-grungy kind
of.
Yeah, it's got that Zeppelin vibe to it. It's like that Whole Lot of Love kind of thing. Which is weird because that acoustic detour is also massively Zeppelin.
Yeah. but also the acoustic detour is massively Harper. Like that's
the
most Ben Harper-y part of the song is where he's not singing when it's that big acoustic.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing, because I just like, I don't know whether that is like interesting because he's disrupting this kind of rocky thing or whether it's more like just not committing to creating a song with a different sound and be like, I'm going to do this, but then just retreat
like,
back to...
If it was like, if it like went up and like it had the payoff...
Yeah, like, this is the other thing that you've hit on. Like, I was waiting for the song to begin throughout the whole song.
Yeah, totally.
Like, it really, at every moment, it kind of gestured towards there being a change, and it never really came. Whether that be in the vocals or, in that, as you mentioned, the time where the entire song just kind of stops down. Like, that got me really excited when I was listening to it for the first time. And I was only listening to this song for the very first time in preparation for this countdown. I hadn't heard it before. I have not heard much Ben Harper. So it stops down. And literally anything can happen at that moment. And then what we get instead is just kind of a little bit, as you mentioned, like of an acoustic noodle sesh. And then it comes back and it just kind of does the same thing again. I will say, but credit where credit's due, the rhythm section slaps big time.
The
drum
like
sound.
Guitar, like, the
awesome.
Slide guitar is amazing. He is very good at slide guitar.
Yeah, we've discussed that previously in a couple of other songs we've talked about here.
Yeah, like I've had a varying degree of relationship with Ben Harper himself, but he's always had such a solid backing band. Yeah. Like,
we can talk about the individual merits of this song, like, in terms of the rhythm section is great, the guitar works, but the problem is that, like, if you hadn't heard Ben Harper absolutely slap with his voice that you know that he can do, you would assume that this is just completely a studio manufactured thing where he's completely out of his wheelhouse because he doesn't, like, it sounds like he doesn't want to do this song, like, because the rest of the band are fucking killing it. And honestly, even his voice, that Ben Harper voice works when he does, when he's doing his, like, rootsy acoustic jams, and that's what suits his voice like that. I appreciate the maybe he's trying something different and, like, trying to possibly subvert, like, masculinist grunge sound with his soft vocals, but it just sounds like he's been thrown into a studio with a band that isn't his.
Yeah, and I think, like, it's all very well to go for that contrast. I think that could have been a nice choice. Like, it's like heaps energetic music going on in the background.
Yeah, could is the operative word, hey.
I think if he just leant back on that a little bit, you know what I mean? It's just pushed it too far. That's all. I actually dig the contrast. I think that's a fairly good choice, but the inaction and how far he's chosen to take that vocally is just weird.
This isn't a terrible song by any means.
I think it's terrible.
And, like, saying faded, so faded is kind of, I can see the hooky appeal of that. Like, it works. Yeah. But it's just, contrast is one thing, but you don't want to alienate the cohesion, I think, is the thing. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. At number 79, this is The Return of Portishead with All Mine. Again at number 79 with the track All Mine from their self-titled second album. Andrew, David, give me a reason to love All Mine.
man, the reasons are there. I don't think I have to provide any more. The second Portishead record, following up from Dummy, this exemplifies the sound of that record in a lot of ways, I think. It's just darker. It's a more offensive, menacing sound, and they do it so well. The crisp fucking snare beat in this is, and like the punctuated by those horns, like it's still that recognizably like smoky, hazy, I guess like film noir-esque sound that Portishead do so well. But like it's been turned up to 11 here. Like the horns punctuate the haziness to give it like grounded in pop music. But then like you're grooving along and it's going well. And then halfway through the song, that insane fucking guitar comes out of nowhere. This noise effect, like kind of My Bloody Valentine-y like drone. It's just like undoes the pop grounding that the horns do. And like Beth's voice, Beth Gibbons, obviously the singer, remarkably beautiful voice.
Oh my God.
Timelessly perfect. She's really able to stretch her like lungs as she belts out some really high notes and some sustained tones, and she just showcases what an absolutely beautiful singer she is. What I love about this song and the second Portishead record compared to like the first Portishead record, that is, so the first one feels inviting and this one feels almost standoffish in how outside the production is from you. It's like the first one they built a world around you, and this one they built a world beside you. You can observe its beauty, but this is for Portishead, and I think this is just a remarkable fucking song.
I think standoffish is the right word. I think like that definitely comes across. And I don't have the musical knowledge right now, so Deej, maybe as the kind of person who's got the music theory, but is that the interval that they use between the notes, like the horn in the horn section? Like, is that the flatted fifth? Is that the tritone, aka the devil's interval?
I believe it's on the level.
Then cool. And that's a heaps cool thing to look up, by the way, in terms of it, like this insane bit of music theory where basically the church went, oh no, the distance between these two notes, the relationship between these two notes sounds a bit too spooky. Yeah. We're going to outlaw it and we're going to hang you if you write anything with it or play it.
Truly too spooky.
Yeah. They named it Diabolus in Musica, or The Devil in Music.
The most famous example in the history of recorded music, The Simpsons.
Oh my God.
Huh. Yeah.
Composed by the devil himself, Danny Elfman.
Whether or not it actually is that, I don't know.
Maybe, yeah. But anyway, it's something to Google.
Whatever it is, it creates such tension. Like, it doesn't let you off the hook at all. So I think, and that tense standoffishness really comes across.
Because this was the first single since Glory Box. Just wanna be a
woman. Yeah.
And if you compare Glory Box to this, like, as a
the parallels are, like, so there.
Yeah,
hey.
They're so there. Like, it's so recognisably the
part
same
part of me
team.
Is like there's like a definitely cynical side of me where I just like the label heard Glory Box and they're just like, can you jazz it up a little bit? Can you make it a bit catchier so that maybe the kids can, you know, bop along? Because this to me is like a popular and like more accessible kind of version of Glory Box.
Really? I think it's less accessible.
It's got the same rhythm. It's got, you know,
but,
that
but
is
it's
just
undercut
super
so strongly by that, as I said, like the tension between the notes that they're playing with. Like, to me, like, it's just so, this is an unsettling, unnerving song. Like, this is like a take on what would normally just be like a big band standard or a Bond theme and just subverting it and taking it into this twisted
territory.
Oh, there's definitely
a Bond theme element to it as well. Like, I was definitely thinking that.
I think this is a track that's written in defiance to accessibility. Like, no,
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. I think that you're right, David. Like, particularly like the horns and the All Mine chorus, like, and the first half is so poppy, like not poppy, but like it's recognizable.
Yeah, you
pop
see
music.
What I mean. Yeah,
yeah. But the second
and
half
also,
is
like,
almost
the
like
BPM
a fuck you
of like this and Glory Box is like just like super super similar. Like, it's very very close, and the drums are almost exactly the same.
I think that's just Portishead's sound, though. I think in a lot of ways, like their songs are often that kind of same lethargic kind of groove, and like they do obviously they fucking nail it. And it's so good that like they took, I guess, but between Dummy and Portishead, the record this song is from, I think it was like 3.5 or 4 years or something between the releases. But like, nothing about Portishead sounds like, we've got to get this done. It's all this relaxed, even like, even when this is at its most menacing, it's not menacing like, ha ha, fuck you. It's just this groove outside of your realm. Sorry, we're doing this for us. This is not something that we're trying to finish or get across the line. We're just doing this insane song. I love the lack of urgency that's in their music.
Yeah. If Glory Box is this kind of sultry, smoky jazz bar that, you know, you go down these hidden stairs to and it's very like warm and rich or whatever, this is much more like watching that bar on a screen. Like, you can't be part of that thing. Like, there's something in the way. Like, intentionally. Like, yeah. It's that production level that, and that tension that kind of, you're watching something a little bit abstracted, a little bit, like, slightly off.
Yeah, that's right.
About that sort of very familiar feeling that Glory Box does have.
The song is Twin Peaks.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. I mean, like,
you can see that smoky bar, but yeah. You don't know how to get in.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, talking about Portishead, like, in terms of cinematography is like a very done thing. Like, so many, you know, journalists and stuff have, you know, said, like, this is making film noir music for movies that were never made, kind of thing.
Yeah, and like, the music video for this song, like, channels that sci-fi series from the '60s called The Outer Limits. Which was kind of a Twilight Zone-esque show, like individual episodes, but far more science fiction-y. Like, I watched that as a kid.
It's which again is about that slight, like, you know, like, so much of that early sci-fi is about the slightly off familiar kind of thing.
Yeah.
Something that...
Uncanny Valley.
Yeah. Something that is very, like, known to you, but there's something different.
What if TV is but bad?
Yeah.
What if TV but too much? I think it's interesting just to throw in a fact that goes along with our discussion of accessibility and standoffishness and whatever. I do.
Lots of fact.
This is the only top 10 hit that Portishead had in the UK.
There you go!
Uh-huh.
All right.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so
you're welcome.
Pick it up, UK.
I fucking that shit.
Yeah, this to me.
They all laughed when DJ Y said this was poppy.
Said this was a banger. Said this was the sound of summer. But who's laughing now?
Bumped
the UK, who has no summer.
This is the sound of the UK summer.
There you go. Oh, familiar, God. But slightly off.
Yeah. I just cruise up with my fucking hydraulics. I'm playing an air horn along with a horn section.
Man, Airhorn 97, you're really ahead of your time.
Yeah, right? I'm just cranking along in a vuvuzela.
you don't know what this is. This will piss you off like a fucker in 10 years. Yeah.
I guess you guys were ready for that. But your kids are going to love it.
This will ruin the World Cup for you in about 9 years.
It's just like someone watching the World Cup and is like, what is that, honey? It's like, I just have this memory of this guy that used to drive around in a big car listening to Portishead and ruining it a lot, very loudly.
This is an episode of The Twilight Zone.
We've done it. This is The Outer Limit.
At number 78, this is The Mark of Cain covering X's Degenerate Boy. Coming in at number 78 in the 1997 Hottest 100, that's a song called Degenerate Boy. It is originally by the legendary Australian punk band X, not to be confused with the American band X, or indeed the Japanese band X Japan. Fucking pick another letter, you guys. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. No. There's hundreds more letters, I'm sure. Just think of them. There must be countless other letters you can pick, guys.
X is the coolest letter.
X is so fucking sick.
Come on.
But this is like a punk classic. Like, not necessarily one that's going to end up on like Aussie barbecue classics. It's one of those niche, like, let's call them cult classics.
Yeah.
Like, the people that know, they fucking... To coin a term.
Cult classic. That's going to take off.
Write that down.
And speaking of cult classic bands, the motherfucking Mark of Cain. Two brothers from Outback just ripping shit, making loud, noisy, fucked off alternative rock for the better part of 25 years, maybe a bit longer. So it's been the two brothers of guitar and bass, respectively.
Mark and Cain.
Cain and Abel. And they've had a myriad of drummers through their career, most notably Mr. John Stanier of Battles and Tomahawk fame.
Huh.
Yeah. fantastic drummer.
Also for Helmet?
Yes, correct. Also for Helmet.
Interesting. Because, yeah. Because like, people
there's
often,
definitely, yeah, a lot of parallels.
It's an interesting thing as well because people often compare the sound of Mark of Cain to Helmet.
Yeah,
but,
big time. Big
but
time.
Mark of Cain predate Helmet, like, to a large degree. Like, these guys got started in 1984.
Yeah.
So even
yeah,
by this stage, they're kind of like a veteran rock act.
Obviously, they're not like commercial stride kind of band, but they definitely got a lot more attention in the 90s.
But that also meant they were contemporaries of X, which I didn't realize.
That's
the original Degenerate Boy came out in 85.
Yeah.
Listening to it, I was like, oh, this is a band covering a song, you know, from before they were a band that is
huge. Yeah, not like covering your mate's song.
Yeah, yeah. I'd be very surprised if they weren't friends.
Yeah, or at least didn't play together.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I reckon having that kind of music around would have majorly lit a fire under their ass, you know.
For sure, for sure.
Consistently interesting band that have always made, like, really sludgy, really heavy, really intense alternative rock. And yeah, like, it's not necessarily stuff that I'm listening to, like, all the time. But every time I get, I hear a Mark of Cain record or I go back and I listen to a Helmet record or something like that, the goatee just bristles within me and I'm just like, fucking get into this. So this was also on the soundtrack to a movie called Idiot Box, which came out in 96 or thereabouts, starred Mr. Ben Mendelsohn, who I believe in the music video for this song is at the start reciting a beautiful, beautiful, eloquent poem to his darling wife.
You're an idiot. You're a bitch. You shit me to tears. I'm going down the pub.
Were you guys, A, aware this was a cover, like, before you kind of, like, looked into it? And, B, has anyone, like, actually, like, listened to X with any kind of depth or anything like that? Or is this kind of like a, oh, so they're covering this band or whatever?
I've heard the early X records just through, like, punk history research, but, like, I wouldn't call myself a fan, not because I dislike them, just because I'm fucking unfamiliar. My Australian punk knowledge, like, is just pretty much limited, like, early punk knowledge is pretty much limited to the classics, like your Radio Birdman and your Saints and stuff, God as well. But, like, I knew this song. I hadn't heard this cover of the song, but I knew the original. The first thing I thought when I heard this is Ramones meets Big Black.
Pretty spot on, maths.
Yeah. Because that's simple maths.
Quick maths.
Because the chunkiness, it's just like that kind of, that masculinist kind of rock, that noise rock channels. But, like, the guitar work is so Johnny Ramone. That, like, simple, mean guitar work that's, like, it's machine guitar work. It just, like, operates as machine kind of thing like that.
Yeah, it's true.
Like, but no, I hadn't heard this cover, or at least, I've seen Idiot Box, so I hadn't remembered this cover since I was, like, 9.
Yeah.
I feel like, I don't know Mark of Cain, but I feel like this is, like, it doesn't quite escape the trappings of the dude rocky feel of it. And I think that's just, partly it's the lyrics, and I know that's just, like, the point of the original X song.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And it's, like, being Australians, things about, like, doll checks and that in songs. Yeah, like, I'm on board enough, I guess. Like,
right.
I feel like I'm painting it too harshly when I say that, when I even say the word misogynist in describing this song, because it's not. I know that it's not. But, like, I think I can see misogynists liking this song, and I think it keeps me at arm's distance, and I fucking hate that I, like, because the song isn't. I'm not bad-mouthing Mark of Cain. I'm sure they're not fucking...
Well, that was a criticism leveled at them at the time.
Yeah, right.
A lot of people use that word in relation to Mark of Cain.
Yeah.
So something about what they were doing.
I don't want to do that.
No.
Yeah, I think, having, like, read a little bit about them and stuff, I think there's an irony.
Yeah.
And in the X song as well.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't come through in the music.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a playful irony.
But it just, like, it doesn't translate in a way that prevents people not getting it, picking up the song.
I think at its purest, that kind of thing is okay because, fuck yeah, I want to be in a pub and I want to be swilling cheap beer and I want to be, you know, wearing a flannel and I want to be, you know, like, smashing around with my mates and whatever. Mm. At its purest, that's a great experience. But I also think, like, I know there are aspects of culture there that I kind of shy away from as well, and it's hard to kind of separate that out. And so that all kind of gets lumped together in this song. Like, all sorts of things kind of spring up in relation to this. And in relation to the original as well, because I think in terms of a cover, this basically just changes the guitar tone up a little bit, makes it faster, makes it more aggressive, and makes it a little bit less kind of Sex Pistols-y. You know, that kind of punk sneer or the attitude, like, that comes across so strongly with the X kind of original, and this is just more like a straight out, you know, we're playing less with the kind of theater of punk and we're just kind of rock this out.
Yeah. I think there's probably an argument to be made about how, like, the two versions and their, like, kind of relative cult success,
right,
12 years apart, highlight some things about particularly Australian male culture in regards to the kind of conflict between ironically embracing and also rejecting those kinds of attitudes. Mm. I think like there's a lot going on in this song kind of, I don't think it resolves any of that, but I think it definitely illustrates it.
I think that's a good point.
Like the two versions of it having success also kind of illustrate it in another way. So yeah.
And from what I can gather, Idiot Box is kind of probably another one of those examples of that art. I haven't seen the film, but I've seen, you know, enough of it to kind of guess like, okay, you're kind of playing with the same palette here. Like some people are going to unironically love it and go like, I relate to this so much. And other people are going to ironically engage with it. And
but
some
that's
other
people not without its like, complexities as well.
It's, yeah, exactly.
But this song, it does bang. It is fucking mean and it's fun. Like, I'm not trying to, like, for the like the negative implications that I've brought up with
it
this.
It is a mean, like, banging punk song.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah.
That,
and,
like,
yeah, and I like mean banging punk songs.
Sometimes that's my only counterpoint, hey.
Yeah, I like mean banging punk songs.
I know, it fucking slaps.
Yeah.
Because there is still the being drunk in a pub, getting covered in other people's beer and other people's sweat.
Yeah, and, like, there are times when that's exactly what I want to do.
100%.
Yeah. But also, I am a white fucking dude, so, like, I'm able to engage in that culture safely. Like, yeah, you know.
A lot of privilege checking, folks. Mm. That's what we're all about. We are the wokest podcast to feature four white guys.
Well, couldn't even fucking joke about it. Edit this part of the thing out. It's already too fucking much.
People say, like, what's Hottest Hundreds and Thousands? Like, oh, it's like, you know, like a music podcast if Chapo Trap House.
Describe it as a woke WTF.
Woke TF. Yeah.
I like to think of it as unproblematic Doug Loves movies.
It's pretty much 99% invisible for Triple J.
Oh my God, it really is, though. Can I do my Amazing Guy Ross impression later?
Please.
Okay. You can do it on
mic. As long as I get to do my Ira Glass. At number 77, it's the Cardigans with Love Fool. Dear, I fear we're facing a problem. With Love Fool coming in at number 77 in the 1997 Hottest 100. Of course, the song famously originally by Australian punk band X. Sorry, I'm just checking my notes again. That's not the case. You know, I made the Porter's Head reference. Give me a reason to love you, Ellie. We don't need a fucking reason to talk about Love Fool. Like,
no way.
I reckon this would have come up anyway. Like, if this didn't get in, one of us would have been like, what the fuck are we talking about Love Fool?
I mean, it's so overplayed and everything, but I love this song so much and so, like, unabashedly. Like, the way it subverts, like, the pop love song tropes, like, constantly switches between the major and minor keys. Mm. That's great. The, like, sweetly sour lyrics about not caring if they really do love her. Like, it's just great. I think the parts all work really well as that kind of lounge pop song, like the bass line, the really tight, like, TikTok drums the whole way through.
Oh, that beautifully loungy guitar.
And in the chorus is like three different hooks smashed into one. It's just like, I reckon not everyone in this room loves it, but I love it. So, yeah.
What the fuck would make you think that?
Yeah.
Who do you reckon the fucking worm
is? Did it get really cold in here, like, the last minute?
Look. Like,
oh, Jesus Christ.
It's not a bad song.
Before you go any further, I just want to point this out. A guy from Newcastle, this photographer, David, was asking when the next season of Hottest 100s was going to come out. And I'm just like, yeah, we're recording at the moment, man. Like, we're getting it all together. He's just like, yeah, it's my favorite podcast. I'm like, man, that's really kind. And he just goes, yeah, look, above everything else, you have my favorite villain in the history of podcasts. And I'm like, what, me? And he just looks at me like I'm an idiot and goes, no, Andrew McDonald.
Whoa.
Yeah, Dave.
Dave.
You're the Hamburglar.
Yeah,
you are
shout the Hamburglar. Out. That's awesome.
Actually,
while we actually say it's awesome, because now I'm the fucking not the villain anymore, Dave, you fucking prick.
But you're like, that's terrible.
Like my favorite kind of villains are the 80s movie villains, where like someone's like, good plan, boss. No, you mean it's a bad plan, a terrible, evil plan. Yeah, anyway. Look, this song, partly like to its credit, I do like the lyrics. I think the way that it plays with the love tropes, like, she almost sounds like she's a manipulative lover, and I think that's really fascinating. Like, that's not something that's explored in much music, let alone in mainstream pop music, very much at all. And particularly from a female point of view, even more interesting. But it's just so fucking sickening. Like, it's just so
Excuse me?
It's like fairy floss that's been dipped in treacle and covered in sugar, and I'm being forced to eat a bucket of it.
Don't appreciate you disrespecting my lunch like that, thanks. I'm right
it's
here.
Food shaming, David.
There's just so much of it to eat.
There's a lot of me to go around, all right? Fuck you.
Like, I don't have a sweet tooth at the best of times, the Cardigans, and you're making me eat a whole trough of this stuff, and I'm full. Again, there's enough to credit an analysis with the major and minor thing that is fascinating, and like, I have a bit of a soft spot for bossa nova jazz, and bossa nova jazz incorporated into pop music isn't something that's done very much, and it's cool that they're playing with these things. And I think the Cardigans have some merit with their composition throughout their discography as well, famously with the Tom Jones. Ruining a talking head.
No. I unironically disagree with you.
Saving a talking head song.
Don't anybody talk about Tom Jones' version of Burning Down the House in a negative light. How dare you?
All right, what's up? It fucking slaps.
What the hell? I don't know what my buddies don't do. Whatever.
Eat balls. Eat balls, warrior.
You cheated. Back to this song, which we can all agree sucks. It's partly the overplayedness, and also in Cruel Intentions and Romeo and Juliet, like, which are, I guess, two kind of inescapable movies of the 90s as well, which this was featured in the soundtracks of both, and then got huge amounts of radio play afterwards. I'm surprised this is not in the Triple J thing, because this is even more like mainstream pop than the Kylie Minogue that we've spoken about. And this is not as good as that. It's not good. I knew there'd be a bit of love for this. I knew that I'd be the Waluigi of the team again, but I didn't know I'd be this much of a Waluigi.
It is interesting though, I don't know the timeline in terms of, you know, its release. I think it was in those movies fairly soon after the release, which would be a huge bump.
Yeah.
Terms of how quickly it transitioned to mainstream and then being in the Triple J Hottest 100, I think someone might know. Let's go to the facts man.
I'm like the
facts man.
It's really good. I feel like the guy on the floor of Iron Chef. You know, when the hosts are like not knowing what's going on.
Fukuzan.
Yes, go ahead. Yeah, what the Iron Chef is doing right now. Romeo and Juliet actually came out in 1996, but Cruel Intentions didn't come out until 1998.
Back to you.
I'm gonna cross the floor as well. I don't know where I sit
What?
Yeah, I don't know where I stand in terms of the alignment that the fans have given me. But yeah, I'm going to be the Grimace to your Hamburglar, man.
Thank you. It's too much, right?
Grimace is good.
Were they on a team?
No, Grimace was bad.
Look at him. Grimace is not a goodie.
How dare you? The most like Grimace out of the four McDonald's characters.
I'm definitely bagging Mr. Moon, the failed 80s guy. the Mac at Night guy.
Holy fuck.
Okay.
Are you Googling Grimace?
So I'm on
the McDonald's wiki?
I got in real deep real
yes,
quick.
It's the McDonald's wiki.
It's the McDonald's wiki. I'm on the Grimace page and the caption for the photo says the iconic parentheses good Grimace.
Yeah!
Well, that means there's an evil Grimace.
There's an evil Grimace.
That certainly suggests that.
Oh my god!
That implies the existence of a nigger Grimace.
Oh my god!
It's one of those wikis comments where you scroll down for the categories, but you go too far and you're like, oh yeah, this wiki has comments.
There's a lot of comments on the Grimace. There's some hot Grimace takes.
Isn't Grimace basically just grim? Next comment, as in mold. It was funnier when he was evil. Isn't Grimace also considered a wumpus? Next comment, I'll be your wumpus boy.
What the shit?
Man, these McDonald's
is horny on Maine. Fuck.
All right, so I am evil Grimace.
Good, yeah.
Originally, Grimace was the evil Grimace with two pairs of arms with which to steal milk.
Yes!
What? So Grimace was the milkshake bandit to the hamburger.
He was literally the Grimace to your hamburger.
Mate.
Holy shit.
After that campaign, he was revised to be one of the good guys and his number of arms was reduced to 2.
Man.
That
sucks for him.
Oh man, I really wish that like heel face turn, like losing 2 arms could be another term for the heel face turn.
Yeah, losing the arms.
Yeah. Fucking hell.
Man.
Wow, that
Did you remember a couple of years ago they updated the Hamburglar, like to not just be like the cartoony Hamburglar?
It was like a Hamburg.
It was a super
like,
it was
wealth
a,
distributor.
Yes. It was a handsome dude. Like he was a male model in the Hamburglar costume. Like it looked like a dude cosplaying as a handsome Hamburglar. But like
it was so anyway, horny.
McDonald's going horny on the main.
Yeah.
Like doing sexy Hamburglar dude. Well, what happened to Sexy Grimace? Wino, sexy Mr. Moonface Mac at night.
Well, look, I think my life like had a purpose. This is another now... easily solved.
Just for those listening to the audio version of this podcast, we've just Googled sexy Grimace, and Grimace is thick and looking like a snack.
Grimace is one thick bear.
Definitely clearing search history after this episode.
Doesn't even matter what I think about this song anymore, does it?
Oh.
I don't think it's good.
Good. Why don't you think
it's good? So you're forearms Grimace right now, not 2 arms.
I have 4 arms proudly on display, and they're all flipping the bird.
They're all stealing milkshakes.
Why?
Well, at least one is.
Why?
I mean, I don't need to devote all 4. Because I think Andrew pretty much nailed it with the sugary sweetness.
Good. You don't have to have it all the time.
I don't want to have it any of the time.
Why
I've had
not?
It enough. I've had it enough in my life.
All right, we get it. You fucking like protein shakes and shit.
I love protein shakes.
Yeah, I'll bet you do.
Yes.
I can't believe that protein shake hasn't taken off as a slang term for masturbation. Yeah, having a protein shake.
Like Blink-182's 1998 album Dude Ranch. That's cum. Mm. Yeah?
It is. It's a thinker.
Jack, well, I know that Pearl Jam is also cum.
Mm. Huh? 90s were all about cum.
They like definitely denied that that's what the band name was meant to be alluding to.
Yeah, because
for what that's worth.
Yeah, because their first name was Tit Job.
I think 10cc is also cum.
Really?
I wouldn't be surprised.
It's the average amount of ejaculate.
Fucking
10
hell.
10 cc's.
Just ruined this. I gotta admit, I came in hard to bag on him, but this is too far. Sorry.
Yeah, you definitely came
time to
in
lose
hard.
A couple of arms.
Yeah, maybe lose an arm. Yeah, but it's too much, right? It's just... It's the overplayedness as well.
To be fair, like,
it hasn't
I think...
It been overplayed in so long, though. Like,
well, that's not an argument.
I think it is. I reckon... There are definitely songs that you hated growing up because they were literally everywhere that you've revisited in the last few years and been like, oh yeah, I remember why I liked this song to begin with. That's me with Loveful. Like, it's been a fucking age since I fucking heard Loveful. And when I heard it again on the bus the other day, like, it was just like, I remember every last bit. I remember every last progression and detour, and it all just amalgamates into this beautiful rainbow trip. It's Rainbow Road, baby. I ride that shit hard.
I actually, when I read this, I didn't know what song it was, by the way. I saw the Cardigans Loveful. What's this song, I wonder? And then obviously from the opening second, you're like, oh, obviously it's this song.
Yeah.
If I heard this song, I wouldn't have been able to tell you the title of it. It's existed as just a part of pop music for so long. Like, it's one of those things that's much like fucking so many 80s pop songs. You're like, oh, the song that goes like this without knowing the name. That was this song to me. I didn't know. Huh. Yeah.
This has always been like a mainstay in like my like 90s pop playlist kind of.
Yeah, one of those.
Like,
bad boys.
You know, 90s, early 2000s. Yeah, that kind of thing.
Have you Googled Forearm Grimace?
At number 76, this is Imani Coppola with Legend of a Cowgirl.
I'm gonna have my man, I'm gonna steal their hearts and save for another day. Ain't gonna hang my hat, I'm gonna take off my boots. Ain't nothing gonna stop me in my pursuit, my stage. Time to rehearse, gonna see all the wonders of the universe. Pack my bags and mount my horse. Oh,
Johnny Coppola at number... Oh, fuck, I hope I'm saying that right. At number 76 in the 1997 Hottest 100, Legend of a Cowgirl. Ride him, cowgirl.
I am
Mr. Andrew McDonald.
Maybe I'm alone here, but have you guys heard this song before?
Nope.
No, because- see, it's not an, oh my God, it's that song moment. It's a... Is this a song? It seems so familiar.
Mm. It sounds like we should all have known it, right?
Yeah.
It sounds exactly like a quintessential 90s pop tune. Like,
it crosses like that. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Well, this is surely just like the female version of Pony by Genuine. Yeah.
I take offense to that.
Nothing.
It's the horniest guy in the room. Yeah.
Look.
The guy who has the protein shakes arms. The most often. Yeah.
Forearms and protein shakes.
And a protein shake in every arm.
What was that weight thing called that you like?
The shake off.
Yeah, the jerk off tool. Yeah.
I beg your pardon.
Yeah. I'm not sure if anybody has noticed before, but the shake weight actually resembles something else. A bit lewd. Oh, yeah. But this,
a little bit lewd and crude.
I hadn't heard this.
The video looks like it's a 90s hit. It sounds like it's a 90s hit. You look it up on YouTube, it's only got 161,000 views.
But it sounds exactly like we should have all been like, oh my God, this song. Because it skirts that 90s like pop rap kind of crossover that was like very much in vogue at the time.
Yeah.
I'm rapping to Marnie and I'm here to say I'm going to be a cowgirl in a legendary way.
Actual that lyrics. Did not come off the top of the...
That was straight from the dome. That's not literally...
Andrew, the last time you came up with something off the top of your head, we got Ale Caesar, De Caesar. don't tell me you just came up with...
I did. It's not even in my notes. It's just like...
That proves nothing.
That's true.
Fuck like when you guys accuse me of fucking preparing in advance my riff on DNA by Kendrick Lamar.
Well, that was also very good.
Thank you.
I think that means that Deej and Andrew need to have a rap battle. Hero of the podcast versus the villain of the podcast.
Oh shit. Oh, it's on. can we rap over Mario Kart soundtrack? Yes. Oh, it's gonna be lit.
Her personality comes through so like wonderfully. Like obviously it's a pretty horny song, obviously.
quite horny.
Yeah. A 7.
Yeah.
About a seven, I'd say.
You're not about to do anything that's
compared to Pony.
But 7 and like 10, commercial radio 11. Usually tops out at like 8.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But like I feel like her personality is so strong in this that I feel like I know her. Like it feels like it's a real
that's nice.
Like I said before, I feel like I should have known this song because it works, everything about it works so well. Like I don't love this track. Hugely, because it's like I'm not hugely into 90s rap pop, but like, it's kind of pretty good. but like, this is just fun, kind of independent, like wonderful, jammy stuff. Like, this works really well as a tune that I feel like maybe to some people this was a massive hit. Like,
it definitely was.
Yeah.
It was, she's a one hit wonder. She tried to follow it up with another song called I'm a Tree. which
nice.
Was not as successful.
What?
Right. Yeah. A good sequel to, this is too niche to even fucking bring up. Don't worry. Go on.
I was like, I'd like to think when Furtado put out I'm Like a Bird, she was like, what? So she can do it. Yeah. Like, that's fine.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's an early Frank Zappa and Mother's song called I'm a Rock. Whatever.
Why didn't you go for the Simon and Garfield I'm a Rock?
Simon and Garfield?
Look.
You're all a fucking mess.
Yeah, I'm like, a rock. I love lasagna. And lasagna never cries.
I actually just remembered the Zappa song is called Help I'm a Rock as well, so it's pretty far
I'm
from
a rock,
the zinger.
I'd say about a 2 on the horny scale. Yeah.
One must be pretty unhorny.
Sound of Silence is definitely a 0 on the horny scale.
But this was a hit, Adam.
Yeah, this was big. If we were having this discussion, I think, as US citizens, then I think we would potentially have...
We'd potentially be getting shot at because America, gun violence, out of control right now.
More
right,
like the
folks?
United
Somebody
States.
Somebody got a rant here, but if we... Like...
Chapo trap out. But it was a big hit over there, kind of less so.
It got up over here,
but I think, again, it just speaks to Triple J's idiosyncratic programming.
Mm.
Yeah.
This, to me, is so 90s Triple J. Like, I think the songs that are coming out in this countdown... seem to be that in particular, more so than any other countdown we've talked about so far. I think the amount of ones that are kind of like Triple J got this up in Australia, but otherwise it just absolutely wouldn't have been played. It has such a particular kind of almost attitude that these songs are kind of getting across.
Yeah.
But is this also perhaps the poppiest top end we've spoken about so far?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, quite potentially too. So I love the story about how this song came about. Apparently she was hanging out in a college dorm room and she was just overhearing girls talking about their love life or whatever. And she's just kind of like, yeah, cool. And the idea of this kind of cowboy persona who kind of, like, as she says, love guys and leaves guys and rides off into the next town, kind of came to her. And she originally kind of thought of doing like a film with it, but eventually it just kind of turned into, like, you know, the song and the film clip and whatever, which I believe also got a lot of attention for her, and that kind of happened.
I really like, as any sensible person, I like any sort of like feminist undercutting of like masculinist tropes, and I think that's she does really well here, because like it's like undeniably a quintessentially American coolness to be like a cowboy who like loves them and leaves them and then hitches up on the saddle and hitching on
that's
the
right.
saddle.
Yeah,
yeah.
But like, again, like the undoing of masculinist tropes from a feminist perspective, pretty cool, and done in a pop way. I wish I was familiar with this song before now, because it should have been part of the zeitgeist.
It'd be a very different conversation if we were like, "Oh, this song! I haven't heard this song for 10 years or whatever."
And that's what I wish it was.
Yeah, and I'm sure heaps of people have that.
Yeah,
that are like that have this weird, like, you know, nostalgia love for this song.
Mm.
What I really love actually is the production and the beat. Like, I think like on its own, that's really cool. It's taken from a Donovan song.
Whoa, really?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which one?
Sunshine Superman by Donovan.
Huh.
66.
Yeah. I love Donovan. Ben Lee's father-in-law. True story.
There you go.
And then she starts flaying it on the fiddle as well. Pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. The fiddle bit's really nice.
Wait. Did that just click for anyone else?
Yeah.
It's gone.
It's a miracle.
I'm cured.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
It finally happened.
Okay, I guess
Adam can hear strings.
I can hear strings now.
If you want context for that joke, previously Adam could not hear strings. Interesting.
I'm so proud.
I see.
Sometimes medical issues just fix themselves by themselves. You don't need to
bad advice. Bad advice. Certainly want to tell myself whenever anything goes wrong with my own piece of shit body.
Fun fact as well, in terms of like resampling 60s songs when you're Imani Coppola. I'm a tree. Just not like a tree, she is one.
I'm like a tree.
It's a metaphor, not a simile. I hope that helps anyone studying
linguistics.
English. But that was sampled Soul Kitchen by The Doors.
Oh.
Because you're never going to listen to it.
Right.
You are not going to go and listen to I'm a Tree.
That's true.
Yeah, so I'm going to tell you about that now.
Well, I'm going to prove you wrong. You're never going to do it, you cowards.
It's a challenge. Listen to 1 second of this song.
That brings us to the end of yet another episode of Hottest 100s and 1000s. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks to FEI Radio for having us. Before we get out of here, we're going to pick our favourites and our least favourites. And because he's had such an incredible breakthrough this week, I'm my best friend, Adam Buncher, you get to go first.
I'm going to go with Portishead for best. And this Daft Punk is burning a hole in my pocket. I feel like I've been holding on for it for too long, so I'm going to switch it up. This is now my carryover champion as well.
Woo! Nice. Whoa!
Portishead. And I think my least favourite is... I was tossing up between Imani and the Cardigans, I think in a show of solidarity with my Hamburglar friend, as the forearm grimace, I am going to go with Cardigans.
Thank you.
No. It's not worse than Beaverloop.
If you believe it,
Beaverloop's still there.
I'm going to be surprised and upset if that changes, because it means there's something even worse in this countdown.
Yeah. My favorite of this week. Also Portishead, but my carryover champ remains the Dandies.
Okay, fair.
And my least favorite was Loveful, but my carryover chump remains
nice.
Loop.
My favorite is Loveful, and my least favorite is Faded. But the main champs and chumps remain untouched.
My favorite is Loveful, but I'm sticking with the Dandies. My least favorite is I guess Ben Harper, but definitely sticking with Viva Loop. Oh my god.
Oh my goodness. On behalf of Mr. Nathan Harrison.
Bye.
Mr. Andrew McDonald.
Good night.
And my best friend, Mr. Adam Buncher.
Ah, nice. Yeah.
The string listening forearmed grimace.
I just got more arms to fiddle with. I mean, no. Fiddle, violins, shut it down. Not protein shakes.
My name is Ira Glass. Stay with us. Everything is good.
Huh, but that's I'm not surprised there's a McDonald's wiki, I've got to revise that, but interesting that he was evil. Yeah. Like, he was introduced as the milkshake version of the hamburger.
Mm-hmm.
I guess milkshake-ler. Doesn't really care. You had to grimace. Honestly, the character design.
They were going
to
make him a duck.
Just drawing a purple oval. And be like, yeah, that's the grimace.
Yeah.
So are you sure you're done with that design? Like, you put a lot of work into the moon face Mac at Night dude and the female duck character that is for
Birdie.
That is Birdie pro milkshake. So Grimace was the villain to milk.
Birdie.
To Birdie, yeah. Because there were chips as well, right? They were like chippy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
they were like the inhabitants of the McDonald's land, and they were just the food things, which is problematic.
Yeah. Man, I'm certainly going to invest some time into my McGobbledoc universe creation later on.
Well, how do you bring the Gobbledoc in there?
Well, he loves chippies.
Well, the whole point of the Gobbledoc is he goes everywhere uninvited. Like,
yeah, well,
he's
from Planet Doc, the potato world. And where do you get your good potato chips? McDonald's. Classic.
Fuck, man, you've thought of everything.
This is
the bonus Patreon content. This is what that $5 a month gets you.
Only fire, that's a steal.
Practically gay in a way.
Oh my god.
Sorry guys, we're talking about music again.
We're all going to hell.